our labor update with Payday Report's Mike Elk, and I'm Bob Bozenko from the Green and Red Podcast. And this is our weekly session where we talk about working people and unions and organizing and elections and activism and all kinds of cool stuff like that. It's not as happy a day as it was the last time we spoke, because we talked right before an election, which we thought would go well, but unfortunately it didn't. At the Mercedes plant in Alabama, the vote was 54 to 46, I believe, against the union. So, and, you know, there was a sense from pretty much everyone involved that it was, you know, looked good beforehand. So what do you think happened?
Well, I mean, look, first off, they only lost by 600 votes. So there was 2,000 people who voted in favor, about 2,600 that voted against it. Yeah. So it's easy when you're among the heavy islands of union support in a factory to think that that support is there. And the other issue is that often people will lie sometimes on assessments. You know, particularly what they're doing here is they're signing up people with a QR code really quick, right?
Yeah.
Let us have a union election. So they didn't have a big built out organizing committee. You know, like in unions like UE, you have one shop steward for every 10 workers, right? And at Mercedes, they didn't have that kind of in-depth system. And the reason you have one shop steward for every 10 workers is that way, you know, that shop steward knows pretty much what's going on with those 10 workers, right? It's not this kind of passive, are you on board? Yeah, I'm on board. No, it's a daily conversation. People are feeling it out. They're having other discussions. So they didn't have these kind of organizing committee meetings where they were meeting two or three times a week. This was a much quicker approach. And in some ways, you know, it should be applauded. They still have a ways to go. And who knows, you know, they're going to have to wait at least 6 months, from what I understand, to get a new election. And at 44-56, that's similar to what Volkswagen lost at the first time. So, you know, Volkswagen had been through this whole routine before, right? And part of the reason I think there was so much, and before I get into that, part of the reason that there was so much media publicity is that quite literally the spokesperson of the UAW, Jonah Foreman, came out and said, you know, when we tell you we're going to win, we're going to win, after the Chattanooga defeat. And you know, they won with 73%. I was thinking, oh, maybe they'll get up to 60, you know, with the, yeah. And, you know, I was on the ground, right? This time around, you know, I was doing some health issues, so I wasn't on the ground. When you have people saying this and you have union leaders saying, look, we're going to win by 70%, which is what they said to us in a podcast, right? Yeah. We're going to win by 70%. You're going to pay attention to that, right? You know, especially when they, you know, said, oh, why didn't everybody listen to us the last time when we said that? So, you know, but the thing is, positive media publicity doesn't trickle into the back rooms of backroom meetings. So what happened at Volkswagen is they've been through the promises of the company twice there, right? They've been through that gauntlet several times. They've dealt with the disinformation. They've dealt with the sweetheart, you know, come back to me one more time tactics. They've dealt with all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they're experienced in it. Whereas with, you know, Mercedes, they've been organizing for 25 years, but they've never gotten to that kind of threshold, right, to have an election. And what you had happen was Mercedes, you know, did these listening sessions where they'd bring people in one-on-one. They wouldn't really bring in the pro-union workers. What they would do is show people, you know, while they were getting dressed, a pro-union video. They would have supervisors go around and assess it and figure out who were the persuadable people and bring them in for very personalized meetings, coffee and donuts, time off the factory floor. And they would listen. And then at the height of these listening sessions, they decided to fire the plant manager. Things changed very quickly after that, within a week. And at the same time this is occurring, Nick Saban, who's from West Virginia and has won 7 football championships, comes out and accuses the union of misusing his pro-union statements. In a press conference several years ago, he gave statements advocating for college players, football players to be able to unionize and say, and he said, you know, look, and this is paraphrasing, he said, you know, look at you know, General Motors and unions. That's been a pretty good success story, right? So he went up and told them to take down that ad. So there was a lot of questioning of the union narrative in the last week and a lot of silent questioning, right? Because people don't, you know, in my experience, particularly in the South, right? People that are going to vote no on union issues, it's like people that say don't talk about politics, right? They don't want to talk about politics because their politics aren't very good, because their politics will get people to harangue them, right? So there was a big, I think, experience with this there. And they didn't have the kind of organizing, the in-depth organizing committee structure you need in that situation to really assess what's going on. And so they lost quite dramatically.
Yeah. In your latest Payday Report, paydayreport.com, you also said that one of the problems was that they relied too much on kind of virtual or kind of distant technological organizing rather than one-on-one actually talking to people.
Yeah, there's been a big issue about, not having that kind of a one-on-one approach. Of course, they're still doing one-on-ones, but it's not systematic. It's not going to people's houses. It's not doing that kind of stuff. Sure, it might be a pain in the ass. Sure, it might be intrusive. Sure, it might seem annoying. But if you really want to know where someone stands, you have to, sit on their porch and have coffee and really get a sense of them as a person, not just a, hey, you for this or for you not. Because look, when people bandwagon. And so I think that's a big issue here. And it's interesting, I think the UAW has admitted that their theory screwed up and that this was a bit of a pie on their face. But you're not really seeing much of that out of the labor press. You're not seeing much discussion of weak organizing committees.
Yeah.
You're not seeing that come up at all.
And there's also, I think you mentioned it as well in Payday Report, perhaps the German authorities might investigate because they're this, in the United States, you kind of everything, but German has different labor laws that Mercedes should have abided by. Or
yeah, in Germany, they can hold companies liable. This is a new law that I think came in the last year or two. You hold companies liable for, labor rights violations overseas, including illegal union busting.
Yeah.
So it is possible that they could get in quite a lot of trouble back home in Germany. We'll see. It definitely sounds like, if you look at the wins at Nissan or Alabama, Bessemer, Alabama, that were big blowout losses, it's hard to come back and try again after those. But this was a loss by about 12 percentage points in a quick election. So I do think within a year or two, we'll see more folks out there.
And is the union going to like file charges about kind of captive audience meetings or these kind of violations of
organizing? They've already filed some charges on various things, and so we'll see how that process plays out. I mean, that's a long process.
Yeah.
I do think it's reasonable to think within a year or two, we could see the union back in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then again, here's the question, and I think this is part of the reason you do rush. If Trump gets elected a year from now, winning union elections is going to be a lot harder.
Yeah.
So there is a kind of feeling that you need to go right now.
Yeah. So, this has obviously been the big story for a while now, and, unfortunately, it didn't turn out well. But there are, kind of some successes, too. Right now, I believe UC Santa Cruz, there's a strike going on.
Yep. A lot of academic workers are striking over against police brutality, against people, including union activists that were engaged in concerted protected activity. And this is an interesting strike. It's an unfair labor practice strike. So what they're alleging is that the police brutality against union activists engaged in a political activity is concerted protected activity. Now, this is interesting because down south, the UAW is saying it's not a political organization. And then on college campuses, it's testing new theories of labor law to help Palestinian liberation. Yeah. So it gives you a sense of how broad and big that union is and the interesting political balancing act. I don't even know if balancing is the right word, but the interesting dynamics within that union.
And that's UAW as well, right?
Yeah, that's UAW there. So that's a pretty interesting situation, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, there's a huge UAW membership among California universities. They've done, you know, kind of pretty been pretty successful in organizing it at that level for a while.
Yeah.
So there's also something going on at Disneyland right now, right?
Yeah, we just saw a couple thousand Disneyland characters unionized. Now, this is sort of an offshoot of some energy of the Hollywood strikes.
Oh, yeah,
we did an announcement back in December that during the campaign, something like 8,000 entertainment workers joined. I think we're now up to 12,000. We're going to have a story coming out in the next week or two about this. And, you know, that's a pretty big win. And I think it goes to show that there's a lot of ripple effects. So, yeah, you know, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah.
I think for the Fain administration, right, because I think the Fain administration, you know, they've been getting a lot of positive media portrayals, right? You know, like Sean Fain has been painted as the second coming of Walter Reuther, which I don't know. I mean, Walter Reuther was a red baiter. I don't know if that's something to be proud about.
Yeah.
But they do have a cult of Reutherism that hasn't even gone away in the new union. So you have Sean Fain there, and you've had all this positive publicity. And, you know, what was the classic line about don't get high on your own supply?
Yeah.
I definitely think the PR people there got high on their own supply.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of reporters, myself included, you know, I wish I'd been on the ground. I would have been able to understand it better. You know, I find it unfortunate. and so, you know, it's just sort of a, you know, it's a hard thing. It's certainly disappointing. You know, it was hard, you know, to talk to folks who've been trying for 25 years. I mean, the night before we were talking and it seemed like Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And now, you know, not a victory, right? So it's what happens, unfortunately.
I mean, for some time now, we've been talking about Chattanooga and Alabama, the UAW votes. And with these, like, in the rearview mirror now, is there something UAW is working on? Is there another big kind of campaign coming up or anything like that?
You know, they've been targeting a number of shops around the country.
Yeah.
We'll see where that goes. I know there's certainly been a lot of focus on suppliers, and we're going to see more. The Fairfax County teachers are going to vote. That's about 29,000 teachers.
Yeah.
That should be a pretty big story.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. Is there anything else you know, you want to kind of bring up before we end this? Anything else? Go ahead.
You know, I think it'll be interesting to see what the next week, what the analysis is.
Yeah.
You know, so far we haven't, you know, if you look at like labor notes, which, you know, it's sort of, you know, an arm of a newsletter of a political organization more than I would call a news publication. You know, they won't mention anything about what they could have done differently.
Yeah.
You know, I think what winds up happening is we get into this shallow conversation of what the boss did. Well, boss is going to do that. We know what the boss is going to do. We always
know. They're supposed to do that. That's why they're bosses. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this is a playbook they've been using for a very long time. And I think people thought, oh, well, we'll change the playbook, we'll change the rules. But, you know, it's similar to what happened at Amazon, right? To do it once is one thing. When a boss isn't prepared or a boss isn't really fighting, like in Chattanooga, you know, and I'm fairly certain that I think Volkswagen assessed that early on and figured they were going to lose. So they didn't want to put up a big fight, you know.
And actually, one last thing, because that reminded me, like you said, Fain has gotten like really good PR for a while now. Do you think this is kind of maybe going to put some heat on him, get some pressure? Do you hear like kind of people in the background starting to kind of gripe a little bit?
Yeah. You know, Fain, you know, there are already people upset that he's not going all the way on BDS, that he's not pushing for divestment. Right. You know, the union has Israel bonds.
Right.
But I do think this is the end of the honeymoon, right? He's had a little over a year in office. There were definitely some, you know, during the GM vote, during the last big three contract, you know, they pushed the vote the contract narrowly passed with a 54% margin, which was less than 2019 under the leadership that went to jail. And, you know, they ordered people back to work without even a ratification vote, without any kind of Democratic say so. So we were starting to see that in January. We saw, you know, people get dragged out of the, you know, endorsement rally of Joe Biden. UAW members dragged out for bringing, literally dragged. You can go to The Intercept and watch the videos. We've certainly had trouble getting access. They've not been fun since we've covered some of the criticism. So I think now they're going to be in a position that, yeah, they're going to get a lot more coverage. That's going to be more critical. But you don't have much of a labor beat left anymore.
Yeah.
What you have at this point, you know, I came up as a beat reporter. You know, you're writing stories 3 or 4 days a week. You're just hoping to get the information accurate. What you have now are folks that are polemicists, that are influencers, that are, hey, let's all go out and fight. And they see themselves as labor leaders. And what labor leaders do in this situation is circle the wagon, point the finger at someone else and say it's someone else's fault. That's not how you win. I do think the UAW, in its statement, Jonah Foreman, they did admit some faults, which is good to see. But unless we really understand that, you know, so I think, you know, I do think it takes some of the shine off of Sean Fain as this, you know, trailblazing leader. I mean, if he'd won right now, we'd be saying, you know, this is the new Mother Jones or, you know, this
G-dabs,
was.
Dabs, yeah.
But yeah. They didn't win. And so now it's someone who had a, you know, a one hit wonder. They're going to be a two hit wonder. They're going to be a three hit wonder.
Yeah.
Are they going to come out with platinum record after platinum record? Because, I mean, we saw this at Amazon, right? You know, they won that big victory there at Amazon and Staten Island. And then they've just got wiped out in every election since then.
Yeah.
They didn't want another one. And then, you know, we saw this big media profile of, you know, Chris Smalls, who is this new spokesperson, right? The media right now is really desperate for a spokesperson, right? There's a big, labor is very popular, right? You know, there was Sarah Nelson, you know, we're going to win at Delta, doesn't win at Delta. There's Chris Smalls, we're going to win at Amazon. Oh, we didn't win at Amazon. And then, oh, we have Sean Fain. They won that stand-up strike. They won at Volkswagen. So I think, and again, I know we brought this up before, but as a Jew, I've often found that in some parts of the labor movement, there's a real view of like martyrdom and sainthood that people really, particularly people from Catholic and Baptist backgrounds and stuff like that, no offense, but that there's a real desire to have someone to follow that, you know, we don't have quite so much in our religion. We have other really bad problems in Judaism, including this terrible war in Gaza. But I think there is a tendency to go towards this sort of sainthood that we need someone to follow. And Fain has certainly tried to play into that. I mean, he's quoting Jesus every other moment, which is a little weird. And he's just, you know, we'll see where it goes after this. You know, he's not been the most responsive person to criticism, but at the same time, you know, maybe this is just a hiccup, right?
Yeah.
Maybe this is a hiccup and get back out there and do it. So I do think it's going to lead to some more questioning, I think, of Fain. He doesn't have, you know, because up until this point, it was like Sean Fain, first person to defeat an incumbent. Sean Fain won the stand-up strike. Sean Fain won Volkswagen. And now it's just sort of like, okay, now what?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the point that we're at is what's next. And it's going to be, you know, interesting to see the reactions of some people. I mean, the reactions so far have been pretty. I think Eric Blank brought up a good piece. You know, I read his blog, Labor Politics. He's a professor at Rutgers, and he's done a lot of studying, which is, yeah, you know, you're going to have, and he showed some data, you're going to have higher loss rates when you're trying to win more, right?
Yeah.
And if you're going to have, if you're really going to bring a labor movement to scale, you have to have rank and file involvement. And sometimes the rank and file is going to fail, and hopefully we learn the objectives. I think that's a good perspective on it.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, this has been hard because, you know, there was a significant sense of optimism, which, you know, normally you don't get. So it was certainly a disappointment. But well, I'm glad we got to do a little bit of a post-mortem on it and talk about some other stuff. And, you know, we'll be back again next week. Thanks for being here with us. This is the our labor update, which we do with Mike Elk from Payday Report. And I'm Bob Bazinga from Green and Red Podcast. So check us out at paydayreport.com and greenandredpodcast.org. And thanks again. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
I'll just...
United we stand, divided we fall. For every dime they give us, a battle must be fought. So working people, use your power, the key to liberty. Don't support that rich man's style of luxury. Children stood right by the men, but we got that union contract that